Please pull up a seat and wind down. Was your sojourn on Rakenjima a pleasant one? The Golden Witch has invited you to a tea party. We hope you choose to attend.
My name is Courtney, and I'm the Witch of Video Games. And once again, we are joined by a very special guest.
Hi, my name is Kelsey. I'm the Sorcerer of Monster Collecting, and my pronouns are they, them. And I don't know if we need to do a special fact, but I have a giant Oshawott plushie in my lap right now, so.
Hi.
That's a very good plush. And also, I'm glad we have another magical being joining me on my side of the table.
Yeah, so you're not lonely.
As always, yeah, I'm feeling ganged up against by these lowly humans.
yeah, we're the ones that are, like, torturing you, Courtney.
Yeah.
So, and these are my regular guests.
Hi, I'm Jess, my pronouns are they, them, and I am a lowly human victim.
Yes, you are.
Hi, my name's Rowan, my pronouns are they, them, and I, in order to kick off this beautiful recording, Kelsey, I want to ask you, fuck, marry, kill, Ava, Natsui, Kyrie.
Oh, jeez, okay.
It's tradition now.
Yeah.
Let's see, fuck Ava, marry Natsui, kill Kyrie.
Wasn't that yours, Rowan? It was similar.
I think that was similar to what I said.
I think I've been kill Ava the entire time.
Yeah, I think killed Ava.
She makes, like, a strong argument.
I think she's probably, like, amazing in the bedroom. I just, like, not willing to, like, take my life into my own hands like that.
Amazing in the bedroom, mm-hmm. Also very killable.
I don't know. She also seems to be pretty good at the killing part, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm somebody whose Mystery Incorporated crush is Velma, and as a consequence, Kyrie is, like, high on my list.
Okay, fair enough. Good taste. Good taste.
Yeah. Same and same.
I'm just too Natsui pilled. Want that Natsushi?
Natsushi! Congrats, that's the worst thing I've heard today.
Oh, you're about to hear worse, my friend.
Oh God, dear. Yeah. I can't believe we haven't done that sushi before. It was right there.
Oh. I've been saving them up.
Starting off strong.
So, we have read up to as far as chapter 17, The Cause of the Tragedy. If you have not read that far, please stop listening now because we will be covering spoilers. Speaking of, spoiler alert, a lot of people die.
No.
Not as many people as I was expecting, I'll be honest. I was expecting a lot more deaths this episode. And
there's a limited number. Can't kill that many people.
Yeah, I thought we'd get through a few more Twilights.
Ah, fair enough.
If you'd asked me, like, early on in this reading, I'd have been like, now we're going to have all the Twilights by the end of the reading. No.
Haven't we had all the Twilights?
We pretty much have, yeah.
Oh, have we? Yeah. Shit.
I mean, it doesn't help that this is a really long part as well.
It's also very confusing how they're executed.
Yes. Yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, it's an unconventional one, I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beatrice J sitting there like, so you like magic?
Do you like jazz?
Hey, I heard you thought Grandad was dead. Well, have I got some news for you?
Fucking iconic. It's been me. He's been me. I'm Grandad in drag all this time.
Kinzo Trite real?
Kinzo Trite
real. Is that a blue truth?
On God, this episode is so Kinzo Triche pilled. I said it last recording, I'll say it again. Like, this is like basically Kinzo wanders around and is like, Beatrice is me in drag. And I'm like, why are you pronouncing a name wrong? So, beginning of this recording, I think we start
Beatrice!
Sorry, I had to. Beginning of this recording, we start with the cousins all going off to the guest house because the adults are like,
family conference time.
Family conference, we don't want the kids there. And the adults are all discussing the status of Kinzo because Maria said this time that Kinzo gave her the umbrella.
Fucking iconic.
And we're now in Schrodinger's study. Is Kinzo dead or alive?
Schrodinger's study.
I love that.
Also, I mean, I guess this is the one time where Kinzo doesn't hate Maria, maybe?
It's been him the whole time.
He hates his siblings more.
You know what,
fair. He hates his children more. Yeah.
It's been him the whole time.
Had the fantastic thought, though, if it has been him the whole time, then he's been sat in his study, like, crying and screaming his own drag name while drunk. Ages.
This is what I imagine RuPaul does before every
screams Beatrice.
I'm sorry. I just love the idea of being like, Bendela Quinn!
That's how you get into character.
Yeah. That's how I get into a character before every recording.
Mr. Jules Genderman.
Glad to learn a bit of the process.
So, they're all waiting in the dining room for Granddad to show up. And lo and behold, Granddad does show up.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone is in the dining room except the children who are at the guest house.
I'm like, where's your wig, bestie?
Yeah, Granddad
so
is
different out of
drag. He is definitely Kinzo.
Yeah.
And he basically says to his children, you all suck. And, I'm not giving any of you the headship. Fuck you.
Yep.
Fair enough.
And he says the bloodline's going to end here with me. But then Nando steps forward and is like, hold on a second. But your children have given you grandchildren. Haven't they produced something of value for you?
Because it's like the trauma dump.
Kinzo's like, I'm doing the maths.
Yes.
Each of your children must
the yen value of children.
The yen value of children is 10 billion yen per grandchild. Do you think they're worth it?
And Rudolph's fully like, Battler's like 10 billion idiots all put together, and I think that's gotta be something. And I'm like, yeah, me too, bestie.
He's like, he's gonna be pretty entertaining if you keep him around. So
put him on your funny little show. I don't watch it. I assume like he'd be great.
I think my least favorite bit of this is when asking Rosa, she just gives like the most like blank faced, like unemotional response, where she's like, "I really love Maria. She's invaluable. Next question."
Yeah, and I'm like, in some ways that's a sensible thing to say, because if you say yes, you're being roped into like something here by Kinzo. This was a loaded question, but at the same time, I'm like, Rosa, I'm like, shut up. Your child is worth 10 billion of you.
Like, feign a little enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of what happens this episode is like based on how well people can bluff, and what I've learned is like not a lot of these people can bluff very well.
Well, I feel like they can bluff, but not around each other, because they're all pretty successful in their outside endeavors to a degree. We're ignoring the crypto, obviously, but around each other, they are all the same level of shrewd asshole. So I feel like you can't get away with the bluffing as well.
I learned today that if you'd invested in Twitter when it first went available for you to buy stocks, and you sold your stocks today now, you will have lost money. So I think that's what Rudolph did. Twitter's gone so far down in its value, it's now worth less than it was when you first could buy stocks of it.
I mean, you've seen the people that are on it.
Mm.
There's a reason I'm not on Twitter.
You know what? Fair. That's smart.
Burncastle Lambda Delta ship are tanking Elon Musk's net worth little by little, and I am here for it.
I've heard there's this really terrible Twitter called the Hidden Tea Party.
They just slander Umineko, even though it's for a Umineko podcast. What's going on there?
So, what I'm hearing is that if Jess was on Twitter, Twitter's stock value would rise.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the implication I was picking up.
Jess is doing a service to humanity by lowering Twitter's stock.
I'm also quite active on Tumblr, where I am actively lowering their prices as well. So I'm just tanking corporations for a living.
The millennial dream!
Yes.
So the reason why, I'm sorry to do like Rowan's stock review, the reason why Twitter and Facebook and stuff are tanking at the moment is because there's a new setting on iOS that disables ad tracking, and that's tanking all their net value. So if you're listening to this podcast now on iOS, you too can do your bit to like rob money from billionaires by just hit that setting, disable ad tracking.
It's so easy. Anytime you open an app for the first time, it asks you, just hit no.
Yeah.
This week we are sponsored by Down With Corporations.
I just, yeah. Felt like having my little communist moment.
The Hidden Tea Party is actually a far left political party that you can join today.
The original name for this podcast was Dead Rich People, okay? We weren't going to be subtle.
True. Hidden Tea Party law.
It's so fine. That's the subheader.
Yeah.
So Kinzo's like, okay, maybe the grandchildren should be tested to see if they can be in my successor. However, I'm still going to go through with my ritual, and I'm going to start killing all of you. And Nanjo immediately turns to Kinzo and is like, bitch, I thought you were joking.
Yeah, and I was, this is the moment where I was like, Nanjo, my good babe Nanjo, what made you think that Kinzo wouldn't be capable of killing 13 people? Like, at what point did you think this man is capable
also,
of joking?
I like to think that, like, what kind of joke was it? Like, knock, knock, I'm gonna kill everyone. And Andrew's like, good one, Kinzo.
Yeah.
Waka waka.
Yeah, like, oh God. Like, I'm starting to wonder, like, that Nanjo isn't a very perceptive individual in his relationship with Kinzo. Mm. Having not
he's
picked up on any of these.
Got Gok 3000.
He's not picking up on the signs.
He's also like, Kinzo's at one point is like, I don't trust you, Nanjo, because I, like, how much money have you ever made? You're not that powerful. I'm like, you pay this man. Yeah. You pay him to sit in your house and play chess. I think, honestly, you're the one that's been bamboozled.
Way to show your whole ass, Kinzo.
just imagine from your perspective, you're a physician, you're off to your casual pal/client's house, and he's like, oh yeah, at the family conference I'm planning on killing 13 people. You'll be there, right? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, nice one. Good joke.
Hilarious.
He's like, haha, kids, like, can't beat them.
And he's like, oh, I didn't even need to do any persuading. My good
hell.
Friend Nanjo, just so ready to be murdered.
God.
Well, he's like, obviously it won't happen to me, right? Right?
No, we're besties. We're fucking besties.
The slight difference in this one is that he summoned the servants in for the conference as well, so there are exactly 13 people in the room.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, there are.
Wow.
Convenient.
Then he summons everyone's favourite characters, the Chiestas, featuring our new Chiesta friend, Chiesta 00.
Yes.
So we have three bunny girls.
Three bunny girls. And this bunny girl is, she's hardened, she's got scars, she's got an eye patch, she's got a serious expression, she's cool and sexy.
Smash.
Yeah. Agreed, but I'm not happy about it.
I'm in such conflict because I flipping love the eye patch. I love the like bunny ear with the scar on it. Like,
yeah,
I'm really here for that. I am utterly triggered by the fact that her name is Double O. That's really upsetting me. I will not be expanding on that. But that is, yeah, no, I wasn't happy about that. But she's cool. She's cool.
And then kids is just like fire at will, and they fire randomly and kill Natsuhi first.
Rip.
Cringe.
Kinza's like, wow, a luckless woman till the end, and I'm like, you can say that again.
Yeah, and everyone's just kind of sat there like, oh, and then they don't really move.
I mean, like, to be fair, what? If you just saw someone get, you know, like shot by a bunny girl, I don't think I'd be reacting that much either. Other than I'm what?
No, I want to point out that their three hairs now are pink, yellow, and blue. So if they stand in the correct order, they can make the pansexual pride flag.
Oh,
I love that nice. For them.
I know. Bunny girls said gay rights.
Pansexual pansexual flag picked only from colors from the Chesters.
So next
has somehow become homophobic again.
That's why they killed the lesbian first.
So next we get Hideyoshi. By the way, all these deaths are the same. They get half their face exploded.
Yes. This is important.
Is next Hideyoshi? It's Rudolph then Hideyoshi. It's Rudolph then. Yeah. And so there are three more left. Next is Genji, which is like perfect timing because Kiri is just about to suspect Genji is being in on it, and then he dies.
Yeah, because all of like Kinzo's servants are just standing there, eyes shut at the side of the room, like, yes, we will accept our fate, and then Genji's head explodes.
So then Rosa comes at Kinzo with a chair and is then killed.
That's one of the best things she's ever done, to be
fair.
It's
true.
Yeah. And then Ava dies.
Interestingly, just want to point out a sweet little parallel. Earlier in this episode, Mammon said to Ange that a furniture's, one of the furniture's greatest duties is, like, also to be a receptacle for their rage. Another duty for a chair is to be smashed against something in anger, and I'm like,
I did not even notice that.
No, I didn't notice that either.
I assume it's a quirk of the like fact that there's so much of this book, of course, is going to be parallels in each other, but I thought it was a fun little moment.
I do wish she'd managed to whack Kinzo over the head at least once before she died, because that would have been really funny. But sadly, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the only person during this who actually manages to try and run away is Nanjo. But I can't remember who it is, but I think it's one of the, like, some of the furniture stands in the way. So he can't get out.
My boy.
Then Kinzo summons Ronave and Vigilia.
The whole gang.
And then finally summons a new demon, one we haven't met before. One of the 72 demons, Garp.
Okay, so I have been calling him Mistress Sideboob in my document. Because what she is wearing is essentially the front and back panel of a dress that was far too small for her, and nobody decided to seam up, and it's just, like, got a ribbon at, like, one side, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
Listen, that's fashion, baby!
That's fashion, baby. So, I immediately, I saw this character design, I screenshotted it, I sent it to my friend, we were doing so many bits, like, Marshall, shout out to Marshall, was like, her name's Gap because there's a gap in her dress, etc. Yes. We then, at the end of this scene, cut to the meta world, and Ange is doing almost the exact same bit. And
I want to talk about that. Like, Ange described it as well ventilated, and I love that. That's like such a passive aggressive way of talking about it.
Gap is like making sexual comments towards Ange, and Ange says, gross, keep the jokes to your clothing. Like, fucking kill her.
Even, like, I won't say I'm proud of Battler, but like, even Battler actually manages to just trash on her fashion without talking about her boobs for a change. Because he's like, yeah, he's like, oh, I don't want there to be any more demons. The fashion sense is just getting worse and worse. And also, they seem to be running out of clothing.
Iconic, fucking iconic. Beatrice interacting with Gap is like good in my opinion, because they like appear to be like besties. And Beatrice is like, oh, this is just demon fashion. It's a bit over the top and revealing, but that's how demon fashion is these days.
Also, it's demon like, designer.
Yeah, they have names for demon designers.
Because she's like, this dress is by Devilish Pretty. It's called Jack the Ripper Christmas Blood.
Oh, fuck yeah, she's got chromas and everything.
And it's got fucking little bones all over it. And I'm just like, I don't think Jack the Ripper would have approved of this.
It's beautiful, it's beautiful. I love that Beatrice fully is like, oh, when this is all over with, we'll have to go shopping in the demon world. And I'm like, ooh.
I wonder if they'll go to Gap.
Oh, God.
Why must you do this to us?
I love a little bit of female friendship, and this is like, I think, one of the first like genuinely like good friendship moments we get ever, that's not overshadowed by either A, tragedy, or like B, one of the people being really abusive.
Well, I mean, a bunch of people did just get murdered, so I don't know if that counts as being overshadowed by tragedy.
I but mean, they don't it's care terrible though. For being there.
They're not letting it get them down. They're having a great time. I also want to point out that Gap on her hat has a little badge in the middle of the bow that for some reason has like hazard stripes. It's like cut into four sections and they're black and yellow. Black and like yellow, she's like a crash test dummy.
I saw that it. And I was like, is she a Hufflepuff in this day and age?
I really would like a pin that's like a Gap colour red bow with the little shield with the crash test dummy. I think that would be iconic.
Thank you. So Gap then decides to was instructed by Kinzo to move the survivors. So she opens up a bunch of pitfall traps and they get Kraus, Kyrie, Nanjo, Canon, Shannon, and she's about to get like Goda and Kumasawa, but they run away.
The Scooby-Doo metaphors abound with these like goofy ass like haunted house trap doors open up and I'm boing down them. I'm like,
yeah,
beautiful.
My favorite thing is like Nanjo's sprite just physically slides down the screen.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's really good. It's really good. He's like, woo. Oh. And then Goda and Kumasawa just being like, nope, and running away. Like,
yeah. Which they managed to do.
With like pitfall traps opening behind them. Like,
yeah. There's so much I hate about Gap, but I also just love how goofy everything is around her. Like,
yeah.
God. I appreciate that she's really like highlighting how ridiculous everything that's going on is.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
And then we get to the meta world, which we've discussed some of already, but the other thing is Beatrice confirms that like she's killed everyone the same way because it's more advantageous for her to shoot someone and like destroy half their face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So therefore they can still be identified as a corpse but can also be identified as dead.
Yeah.
I want to highlight a Beatrice quote here. She says, I wanted to leave the Joker called Kinzo face down a little longer. Joker is capitalized.
Yeah.
Kinzo is the Joker. Beatrice is his queen. And God help anybody who disrespects his queen.
Right, moving on to the next chapter. I I don't want to dwell on that.
I just have a moment, like a screen cap of like just the line where she says, "I wanted to leave that Joker called Kinzo face," and I was like, "Whoa, that's a line. That's a line."
Yeah, I do appreciate as well how like episode two was like, "Oh, you didn't think Beatrice was real? Well, she's all over this place." And then this one was like, "Oh, you think Kinzo's dead? He's all over this one."
Yeah. She says something like, "Oh, I'm going to like starve you of red truth." Like she's like fasting Senna or something, where she's just like not going to take the hit. And she's going to like, and I can really see how that's happening. Like over the course of this reading, we watch locked rooms form themselves. Yeah. Like we watch the humans essentially demonstrate locked rooms happening, and I'm like,
I do want to point out though as well, like with the whole Kinzo being around thing, I think it's interesting that like because Kinzo's doing, he's in the new role of Beatrice, he's doing all of the magic, he's doing the killing and stuff. It does, like, I don't know if him being here actually confirms he's alive or not.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if you're dismissing all of the supernatural explanation, then he might not be here at all, because he's only associated with that.
If we believe that every scene that involves a demon, witch, or, like, furniture magic is untrue, then most of what we see this chapter is just like completely fabricated.
Yeah,
including every moment where Kinzo's there.
Yeah, so interesting to see.
So now we get to a very special chapter where Rosa wakes up inside the meta world.
Yes.
And sees Sakutaro, who seems to be trying to rescue her from something.
Yes.
However,
she's too much of an asshole to be rescued, unfortunately.
Yeah.
No.
Denies him, and he kind of dies again in front of her.
Yeah, because she realizes who he is, and instead of being like, "Oh, sorry, I killed you," she doubles down on it.
Yeah. And then she starts talking about how everything she had as a child was broken or like taken from her, but because she held in all her feelings, she was able to become the wonderful adult she is now.
Yeah, the text for that.
The text. It's the SpongeBob meme. Every other letter is capitalized. And I fucking love that. Like, she's there like, the wonderful adult she is now. I'm like,
I am flapping my arms and like pursing my lips to imitate SpongeBob. I'm the wonderful adult I am now.
I'm like, I do appreciate how explicit the game was on making that, like, absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. I'm like, thank you.
Intentionally or otherwise.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I do wonder that I think the game's release would predate SpongeBob, so it's perhaps accidental, but with the information we have now, it's beautiful.
Well, as we said, truth is change when you observe it from the future.
And yes. Our truth now includes SpongeBob.
You are the only one who determines the meaning of your journey, and the meaning of my journey is, I'm the wonderful adult as I am today.
All this breakdown confirms for me is that this game would just be, like, so much better if just the Yashira Miyas went to therapy. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You can unpack this with a professional.
Yeah, I'm just like, Rosa, just because you repressed everything doesn't make you better than your, like, a better victim than your daughter, okay? Like,
yeah. Yeah, not about it.
And then her hands get snapped off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So they, like, Maria break, appears. Like, pottery, don't they?
Like the little ceramic bunny that she threw across the room. Oh,
whoa! Parallels. Wow.
Parallels.
Maria says that because because her mother like hit her head more than she patted it and like didn't like make her food, there's no point in her having hands.
Mm-hmm.
because all she does is use the hands to hurt Maria. And then Maria summons, like, giant hands to tear apart her mother like she did Sakutaro.
Yeah, they're, like, with long nails and, like, yeah. This scene is simultaneously really horrifying and also really satisfying at the same time, because you're like, yes, Rosa deserves all of this, but at the same time you're like, this is not going to be helping Maria at all, is it?
Like, I'm a really big fan of the movie The Northman, and one of the things The Northman does is, like, it slowly creeps you into believing that the violence is justified, and, like, you see horrible things happen, and so, like, when the Northman Amleth, like, starts committing horrifying crimes, you're like, yeah! Warrior! And this, it almost had the same effect to me, where, like, initially I was like, yeah, Maria, get your revenge! And then I was like, wait, what? So that was really interesting to me. They have an exchange where, like, Rosa eventually, like,
so
backs
Rosa
down
keeps
and is,
like getting brought back.
Yes.
To life and like killed whoop. Again. Continue on. I just wanted.
No, it's okay. She's making some beautiful iconic noises, including fuhi ha 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 ha, fuhi he 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 ha ha ha, beautiful. Really. Just absolutely loving these death screams. Fuhi ha ha ha. Adding that one to the dictionary.
I think one of the worst bits I feel of the whole Maria Rosa situation is even in this bit where like Maria's like showing how much she's hurt her and stuff. Rosa again like doubles down on everything and instead goes on like this awful rant about how much she hated Maria from before she was born and like it was Maria's fault she could never find a new boyfriend, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. And she continues that through several rounds of being killed. So like it's like even death isn't enough to fucking shut her up.
Yeah.
And it's like, phew. Like,
I'd say you have to respect the commitment, but like, no, you don't. You don't.
I refuse to respect anything about this woman.
I'm just like, Rose is even managing to ruin Maria's revenge fantasy. Like, how are you? Like, you know.
It's because Maria's going about it the wrong way. She should be being like, "Mama, Mama, bake me and turn me into a pie," and then Rosa would feel remorse.
We get this really creepy CG of Maria that I kind of hate, and kind of wish wasn't in the game.
Yeah.
It's so unnerving.
Yeah.
Emineko really going hard on the, like, weird eyes, lots of teeth. Like, basic.
I don't think it was primarily necessary.
It seems to be, like, primarily Maria, too, and they're like, we can do this!
Yeah! This child has teeth! Yeah! And I'm like, ooh!
I'm just like, I'm not reading... From all of this stuff that's happening, I'm not reading Maria as demonic. Like, she's not enjoying herself. She's really upset. Like,
small child having a breakdown.
Rosa here? Is that what you're trying to, like, put us in the position of, game? Because I'm not about it.
My reading on this was basically that, like, doing this was turning her into, like, something more evil. And I suspect that, like, Beatrice is gonna, like... Beatrice's there encouraging her, like, the whole time, kind of. Mm-hmm. It feels a bit like she's being groomed into being a murderer.
Like, yes.
And stuff, and so I feel like that's kind of gonna be a narrative thing. Which is sad.
Yeah, it feels really weird if that's the case then, because it's like, the child of abuse doesn't deserve retribution.
Okay, there's retribution, and then there's killing your mother in your head repeatedly.
Like, I'm not saying that this is a healthy coping mechanism, but I think the game has a really delicate tightrope to tread, and once again, I do not have the faith in this book to do so.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath, waiting to see. I'm hoping that at least if she does turn into a villain character because of this, that the entire blame for that is put on Beatrice, not on her.
Yes. Yes.
That's fair.
Bare minimum.
Yeah.
Bare fucking minimum.
Yes.
Anyway.
Maria wakes up from her nap and gets into a bit of a fight with Battler. And then she's like asked to forgive him. And she goes, hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-hee, with each he being particularly punctuated, and then says, all right, I'll forgive him.
I think it's really interesting here because Maria's particularly mad at Battler for saying that she was asleep, and I'm like, that's because Maria thought she was awake because she was dreaming of the meta world where she was killing her mother, and she doesn't want that to be denied.
I hadn't thought about it like that, because I did think it was a little bit strange, like, why she was so insistent that she'd been awake, but that does make sense, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Because also, in her head, she was awake, and if she was asleep, that denies witches.
Yeah.
Something I didn't pick up on until I was rereading this, and I messaged Courtney last night, and I'm like, hey, I have a question. So, about the key he's, is that Maria killing Battler in her head?
Ooh.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. How many?
That is, in my mind, the implication as to why each he is punctuated and why she says she'll forgive him.
Interesting. Are we to take that every time she said that, that's been a kind of like, I'm killing you in my head kind of thing? Then, do you think? Because she does it a lot.
I don't want to retroactively consider that. Oh no.
But yeah, I think it's interesting.
I'm not sure
well
if every time she does it, but...
But that time is quite... Mm. We have some more context for the ki-hi-hi, because, yeah, after the whole thing where, like, Anja leaves and Sakutaro dies and everything, her and Beatrice, I can't remember when it was, like, basically recontextualize the Witch's Alliance to be a kind of, like, pact to kind of curse people and take revenge and stuff, and it has this very, it's much more darker undertone and stuff, and it kind of suggests that, like, it says something like, oh, Maria will turn into Witch Maria, and it's kind of portrayed as this kind of evil force or something of, like, revenge. And I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen?
they have... It's interesting because I know that, like, imagining violence in your mind when bad things are happening to you and, like, imagining retribution or punishment is a, like, a known coping mechanism. And we see that happen repeatedly throughout here where Ange, Maria,
yeah,
and, like, maybe even Beatrice in her own way are imagining their retribution against their abusers. In a, like, a horrifyingly violent way, and they're given their own power back in their fantasy worlds because they're able to, like, torture these people. And the visceral, like, death that happens to Rosa is a correlation to, like, the pain that Maria has experienced.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at that.
Yeah, I'm like, I hope
trauma
it goes...
responses are crazy sometimes.
Yeah, I'm like, I hope it goes somewhere sympathetic.
Here's fucking hoping. So anyway, that happens.
Oh, and yeah, Gojo and Kumasawa are like, hey!
Yeah, so they yeah, appear in the guest house, and they're like, your parents are dead. Shit. Their faces have been smashed in.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Okay. And then we cut to the dungeon, which is where the five people who got hold have shown up in, like, this cage at the bottom of a dungeon that they can't seem to quite work out how they've got there.
Yeah, they don't know how they've got there. And they don't know, because they all check their watches. They've got three watches, and all of them are the same. And it suggests that only 10 minutes have passed since they lost consciousness. So they, like, yeah, I think they were talking about, like, ooh, have I been drugged? But, like, being drugged and then moved and then waking up would surely take longer than 10 minutes.
So they also talk about trying to escape. This, I am screaming and clapping at this, because the PS3 sprites, the CG that they've got for this, there is a great big hole behind them in the wall, like in the scenery that they've got. And I realize that's just a quirk of the sprites, but the whole scene, they're talking like, how do we get out? We can't get through the bars, and maybe if I lose these rocks, and I'm like, y'all.
Turn around.
Y'all. ooh, come on, gang. That just like really cracked me up. So much that I wrote it down.
I hadn't thought about that, but I can picture it now, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
They also discover that there's a phone in there with them, and the first thing that they do is, like, obviously they try the phone. Kyrie and Kraus assume that the phone is, like, broken immediately, and then Shannon tries it and is like, Kyrie, miss, it's working, actually. I wrote down, the phone line is designed to get samples of Kraus and Kyrie's voices to be used later in the murders. That's not proved true, but I think that's an interesting theory.
Well, I did think
yes,
that
because,
was...
Yes, because Kinzo is a known creator in the remixing community. And
he's
going to do a sick dubstep mix of Kraus and Kyrie freaking out.
I mean, that's how he does his Beatrice voice. It's fine.
Oh my god. He's like the kid from Baby Driver. He's just got like a bunch of
yes!
like, tapes in his bag, and it's like, was he slow? No.
I think it is funny though, isn't it? Because like, I think Kraus and Kyrie, because they can't get through because they're trying to ring like the police. But Shannon tries one of the internal lines, so she tries calling the guest house, and that works.
If Shannon's like... in on it, she's doing a lot to like gently coax Kraus and Kyrie to do exactly what is intended of the plot.
Well, what I did think is interesting about this is that it specifically says that like Kraus talks to Jessica, Kyrie talks to Battler, like basically everyone from the dungeon talks to everyone in the guest house. And I was wondering whether that was just like, was that trying to prove that that all of those people were alive to the people in the guest house by having their voices on the end of the phone?
In absence of Red Truth, it is a really good way of confirming that these people are alive. What it doesn't confirm is that
the things
that they're saying are true.
Yeah, all that.
Yes. Because they do start talking about the stuff that happened with Kinzo and like, the weird, unexplainable stuff.
Yeah, and I'm like, somebody has a gun to their head.
But yeah, I did think it was interesting that, like, obviously they kind of, their identities are kind of confirmed by that conversation. Like, nobody thinks, like, oh, that's not their voice, or whatever. And I was like, and, you know, it's revealed that the phone was put there specifically for this, basically.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm just like, oh, okay, so...
Mm.
What was really going on?
So they had this phone conversation, and then I think Kinzo shows up with like his Goombas,
his entourage. Kinzo,
the squad, and he's like taunting them. And there's two very specific things I've written down in Kinzo's taunting them. One, Kinzo cannot stop being a raging misogynist. He's summoned Gap, and she's like taunting them and being like doing her thing, and he's just like, he says, quote, ugly woman drowning in lust, and I'm like, you summoned this woman, like, you asked her, you invited her, you were like, come hang out, mop my floor with your cashmere shawl or whatever the heck they're going on about. Like, how... Shut up. Like, her value is not determined by whether or not she's got a titty window. Like, come on.
Yeah, I think he mentions quite a lot as well, because it's clear that Garp and, like, Vigilia don't get on particularly well.
Because
Garp keeps shortening her name to Leah.
Yeah, they're like having a little spat, and like Kinzo's uh-huh. just there going, "Oh, noisy women."
Like, dude, shut up. This is not a good own.
Honestly, I would say the biggest hole in the Kinzo drag theory is like, could he really be doing drag if he's that misogynist?
I mean, he's putting on an act, obviously.
That's thank you for saving me on that one.
My brain just sent, what if Kinzo's the drag persona? Beatrice's there just going, like, I'm going to dress up as a misogynistic old man.
doing caricature of, like, horrible.
This is
horrible
actually some critique of the patriarchy.
Oh, fucking hell.
It's very deep and thought out.
I respect, also, Gap makes a bunch of dungeon jokes, and I really respect that. She's, like, popping off, like, Ronave at some point is like, I thought you liked it, like, freaky or something. They're, like, really implying BDSM stuff without actually saying it. And she's like, oh, blah, 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 like, oh, it's really, yes, I do like it kinky. I like it when a guy gives me a collar for my birthday, but only yeah. if he's hot or something. And then yeah. Virgila, like, is like, oh, maybe you should have a gag for that stupid whore mouth of yours. And she's like, haha, I didn't realize you were into that, Virgila. And I'm like, okay, I respect these owns that she's handing out. Like, this is a reasonable weapon to be using against these people. this conversation does reveal that they are underneath Kuadorian, because I think Gap at one point says, if I was trapped in a mansion by some guy, regardless of how hot he was, and I found out that they had a dungeon underneath it, I would fucking run. And I was like, secret passages,
yeah,
underneath Kuadorian.
Yeah,
they're underneath Kuadorian.
They are in Kuadorian, the dungeon underneath.
Yes, because Kinzo basically says to Namjo, like, I thought you'd recognize this place. I know you've not been here, but you've been upstairs. And so that also revealed that Namjo has been to Kuadorian, for which I say, why?
In order to deliver a baby.
Yeah, I have to assume it's to look after, yeah, baby delivery, or like Beatrice's mom might have been ill at some point or something like that, or both. And Namjo needs to tell us about these things, and we need a Namjo interrogation scene is what I'm saying.
Well, speaking of, we don't quite get a Namjo interrogation scene.
Well, we do, but it's the wrong Namjo.
Yeah, wrong Namjo. We cut to 1998, and Ange has decided to meet up with Namjo's son, Masayuki Namjo.
Who I've just written down as Namjo 2, because I wasn't going to... Sorry,
Namjo 2, but worse. Namjo 2, but he's, like, nowhere near as hot. I'm like, what's going on here?
The roundness
is he has hair and is not orb.
Yeah, and really, what I look for... on God, in a partner, is, like, just a little bit of, like, skin on those bones. Come on.
He has a lot of, he has a lot of chin, though.
He does have a lot of chin. He's got a nice round face. I appreciate a round face. That's good.
But he reveals that, shortly after, Namjo died in the incident, he got a letter addressed to his father. But the way it was sent is it was sent to, like, a phony address and then returned to sender. Mm-hmm. And inside was a certain set of numbers and instructions for a bank vault.
Yes. And it's the numbies. The numbies that were
numbies
on the door in episode 3, which numbies. Was 0715-1129.
Inside, when he goes to the bank account, inside is a lot of money, and he's like, this is criminal money, I don't want anything to do with
it. Like, nope. Which is very sensible, I think, probably.
Yeah. So, for some reason I decided this was the moment I was going to pull out why I think Humaneko's bad. So as he's describing going into the vault, he meticulously in every detail has to explain what he does, to the point where he says, when I passed the card through the reader, I was asked to input the PIN. And after that, 8-digit number was input and authenticated, I was permitted to access the vault. And I'm like, you have told us all the ingredients you needed to, like, get into the vault. You did not need to describe every second of you.
But what about the dramatic tension, Rowan?
There is so such a thing as, like, too much of a good thing, I guess.
Not according to Ryukishi.
We then cut to Kumasawa's son, who tells a similar story about he is round, by the way.
Yeah, yes, I'm like, ooh, smash.
Yes. And then Anja also has a bit of a memory being like, oh yeah, didn't I receive one of those envelopes that was addressed to Rudolph, but she was only 6 and she was terrified of it, so she threw it away.
Respect.
And I'm like, sensible.
She was 6. She was 6.
And she starts, like, thinking about Beatrice as some weird trickster god who, like, did this weird letter plan, even though it, like, might not have worked.
I thought it was an interesting thing to fixate on, because she's just like, why would you use that system? Because it's so uncertain when the letter would come back with return to sender things. And I was like, well, I have to assume then for that that it didn't matter how long it took. Was what I took from this is like, so long as it arrives after the weekend where the murders happened, which it would have done if it was sent. It was sent the day before the conference started.
Do you have any theories on why she might have done this?
So it looks good as, like, if someone's trying to prove there's a witch around, who has lots of money and stuff, that's kind of, I can see that having happened as something that, like, someone might be like, oh, I'll set up this kind of weird circumstance and then, like, give money to the survivors, and it'll seem like it's a big setup kind of mm-hmm. ritual thing. But I'm really not sure. Because I'm not sure if that's concrete enough, really.
I'm willing to back you up on this one. Again, I think we need a witch explanation for this.
Yeah, I want to know why Beatrice would have done it, to know why a human might have done it.
She's a kind of benevolent witch, obviously.
Mm. Obviously.
Well,
what a queen.
Because it said in the end of episode 3 in the character screen when it was talking about George and those numbers, and it said that a small golden land was given to him, basically. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, like lots of money in a bank vault is, I think, qualifies as a small golden land, probably. But
is
why?
Is the golden land just money?
I hope
not.
But also, like, just having the pin, like just scrolling the pin, like the pin alone, wouldn't have got anyone in. Because you'd need the card and you'd need the key for the box and stuff. So I'm not sure what the purpose of scrolling on the wall was. And also, who the hell knew the pin to have scrolled it on the wall?
Shannon has found the gold previously. Okay. Because that's when she went to the shrine. That's when she shattered the mirror. She's gotten to the golden land previously. She knows where the gold is. She's got, like, the pin or whatever. She knows what's going on with that. When George went to Shannon's body, he found that information on her. He was, like, groping her corpse titties or whatever, and, like, found it, like, letter tucked into her bosom, looked at it, and was like,
code. Yo.
Cash?
Is that your theory?
It's an interesting one.
Sure! I'll set that little standee up. You can knock it down if you like.
I have a question. Are you implicating Shannon as doing murder?
Yeah, I've been doing this the whole time. My current master theory a la pod lore is Kinzo, Canon, Shannon, Genji.
Okay, and Kinzo was... So what you're saying is, Kinzo found out, Shannon found the gold and was like, hey, you want to help me kill my family?
I think these are separate things. I think Kinzo was like, do you want to help me kill my family? And also separate to that, Shan found the gold.
Oh, and Kinzo doesn't know that she found the gold.
I think so. I'm continuing to implicate Kinzo. I may, when we have our big theory discussion, it may unveil that there are some people in my master theory who are not present, who are present in this current theory that aren't in my master theory. But currently, yeah, I'm thinking Kinzo knows. Kinzo's masterminding it currently. That's my accusation.
Another small suggestion that I have about the bank stuff, I guess, is that Namjo 2 specifically says that when he took the key, the card, and the pin with him, he didn't need to have his identity checked by the bank to get into the safety deposit box with the money in it. So it doesn't, I guess it doesn't necessarily mean that just because, like, Kumasawa's son and Nanjo's son was sent those things that it was necessarily meant for them. They could have just been like, right, I'll send it to these people and then I know whose house it's in if I ever need it. I don't know why you would do that, but like...
So you think this is like a contingency plan of Beatrice's?
Possibly.
Okay.
I'm just like, oh, I can always go kill Nanjo too and take his... if I run out of money.
Spare bank.
Spare bank, yeah.
The bank of orb.
So what happens next? Because my
name... So next, Ange goes to the boat captain, who's like,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to take you to Rokkenjima tomorrow. And you can stay the night here. Just go get some stuff from my futon room. And inside, yeah. Ange sees something that makes her go, magic is real, and start crying.
Yeah.
I'm like, fucking hell.
It's confirmed that, like, Amakusa and the boat captain guy are looking at it and being like, there's nothing there. But, like, Mamon and Sakutaro could obviously, see something. But they don't tell us what it is, because that would be too annoying. But they're confused about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that
means.
But when she's talking about it, like, Anja says, like, she mentions both Maria and Beatrice when she's looking at it and says, like, she understands why she has to go to Rokkenjima now. And I'm just trying to work out what someone could possibly have seen that would, like, tell them that.
Yeah. Also, so the boat captain... It says that Kinzo's given him loads of money and he doesn't need money from Ange. And also, like, taking Ange to Rokkenjima there and back safely is gonna, like, give him closure, I guess, which is cute. But also, what? This scene is, like, I think designed to, like, make us ask a lot of questions and not give us very many answers. And I was just like, sure, okay. What I really needed was, like, less information. no pop off, bestie, don't explain anything.
it was a bit of a cliffhanger, that one. We don't get much about what on earth it could be.
Yeah, and then we cut back to 1986, where the cousins are told they're going to have to do a test administered in order of age.
Mm.
So, sorry, in order of inheritance position, which is basically age.
Yeah.
Apart from Jessica comes before George. First, they have to lock Goda and Kumasawa in, like, the shed.
Yes, and it's the Rose Garden shed where all the bodies were found in episode one, which I think is a nice parallel. Especially considering that the first six method of murder is quite similar to the one in episode one as well.
So,
parallels.
What they do is they put them in there, lock the shutter, and then throw the keys through the window, but, like, you can't open the shutter from the inside, so they're basically, yeah, like, fully locked in.
Perfectly, yeah, so creating a red truth-starved locked room.
Yeah.
Yeah. in case anything happens, which, you know,
yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine.
The Chiestas are watching them do this. Oh, also, at one point, I've got to bring this up, the Chiestas do mention about a dead companion of theirs.
Yeah.
And that's supposedly why one of them is traumatized.
Also,
well, they're all traumatized, but one's injured.
True. Also, 00 says something about collective responsibility, and I'm like, key phrase.
Yeah, will this come up?
Something, like, this is the same.
Something, if one person in the family does something awful, everyone has to be punished? Something? I don't know.
Interesting. Anyway, it's a perfect mirror of what we've been discussing about Ange, so. Yeah.
Sorry, I also forgot to mention, when Ange goes to visit Kumisawa's son, to basically confirm he's had the same letter, he confirms that there were some notes in Kumisawa's possession that basically implied she'd been trying to solve the epitaph, including a photo of an arched western doorway that's, like, on, like, the outside of a building, which I presumed was the front door of Kuwadorian. And it's with an English relief on it that says, "This door is only opened at a probability of quadrillion to one," which is really similar, if not exactly the same, to the relief that's written above the chapel. But it obviously isn't a chapel. And I'm wondering whether it's some kind of marker basically saying, "Hidden tunnel here."
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Wonder if we'll get any evidence for the existence of more hidden tunnels this chapter.
I need to go.
Moving on.
That is an interesting key phrase. I think you find very helpful to write down.
Yes, I have written it down. And I'm going to look at exactly what it said on the chapel. Because if it said something like a trillion on the chapel one, then I'm like, ooh, this sounds like a code. Or like.
So Batlick didn't know what was written on the chapel because his English sucked.
No, but Maria basically translated it.
Yes, but she didn't give him the exact wording in English.
But
I'm nervous that Umaneko is a Numbies game secretly. I will expand on this later, but I think
about?
It's a Numbies game.
Yeah.
Courtney, no. Red truth me now. Is it a Numbies game?
Like,
I don't know what Numbies game means.
There's Numbies in it?
It's a game about getting the numbies as high as you possibly can until the point where it's quadrillion and therefore you can access the golden land.
Yeah,
that's not what Umaneko is about.
Okay, thank fuck.
Like, having already played one series of visual novels where you are given a calculator, I don't want to go through this again. Yeah,
wait, what series of visual novels has the calculator?
It's the Zero Escape ones.
You don't want to find digital roots?
Okay. Yeah, it's like, work out the digital route of this and this and this, and they give you a calculator to work it out with that you can access at all times. And
then the second game gives you, like, actual notes that you can go reference, like you can write down your notes on your D3DS.
Yeah.
No.
Like, don't make me do the digital route again, please.
Anyway. It's not like that.
You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves. Anyway.
So,
Jessica
and George are summoned for their various tests. Jessica's is in her room, and George's is in, like, the, like, well, what's it called? A little,
chapel?
Tombola,
or not chapel,
like, not tombola, gondola? No. Gondola?
I think it's called an arbor in the game.
An arbor, there we go.
Which I don't really know what that is. I'm presuming it's some kind of little
gazebo.
Gazebo, yes!
Yes!
I'm thinking of gazebo. And they are tested by Renove and Gap, and they are given this question.
Hold on. Point I want to make, as they're, like, going to go to the as the kids are going to leave, there's a moment where Kenzo's like, oh, I'm going to test the children if the children are your greatest value and that there's a reason why they should be the successors. I want to point out, only one of the people currently in the dungeon has a biological child in the other room. Because Kraus is the only person whose biological child is now being involved. Kyrie is not Battler's biological mother. I will accept that she's his mother. Like, I will accept that. But, like, Canon, Shannon, Nanjo. they're not related to each other at all. So they're, like, boasting, like, no, I'm proud of my kids. And I'm like...
You're who?
setting up a little standee accusing once again that Jessica isn't Krause's biological child. Wondering if that plays out just because of patterns. Setting up my argument. Knock that one down, witch.
Another thing as well before we get into the test is that... so... Jessica when she's in her room, Ronove is there. And she makes a connection that I had never noticed. And it annoys me that I haven't noticed it. She's like, oh, Ronove, like Genji. Because Genji's first name is Ron... I don't know how to pronounce it. Ronove. It's exactly the same, but it's a U instead of a V. And I'm like, oh my God. They're the same person. Oh my God. and Ronove's like, oh yeah, Genji. He's like my little brother. He's like... And I was like, is it just like, you know, his human self, basically? And anything that we see Ronove doing is basically stuff that Genji's been told about.
If we have like a handsome twink version of Nanjo, do you think Twitter will ship the two of them finally?
Is that not just Gap?
Is Gap the handsome twink version of Nanjo?
What a sentence.
Please! My day is made.
So before I, you know, became a sorcerer and was familiar with everything, one of my like long-standing theories was, oh, okay, so the demons are all supposed to be demon forms of the humans. And that got crushed in this chapter because I'm like, oh, okay, so the demons won't show up until their human forms are dead. And then Virgilia shows up and Kumasawa's still alive. And I'm like, well, back to the drawing board on that one.
Fucking iconic. I love gobsmacked. Gobsmacked. I want that to be true.
I'm
so
still
bad.
Kind of with that theory, to be honest. Nanjo's but I like... It's less about... for me, it's less about, like, oh, the demon form can only be there at certain times. And more that, like, I think things like... Ronove and the things we see him doing and stuff are supposed to give us more information about what Genji's been up to that we haven't seen.
Oh, so I like that.
Like at the beginning of episode 3, Beatrice asks Ronove to set up the locked rooms, and I'm like, maybe someone asked Genji to do that. Kinzo, probably. and like, Virgilia just confirms herself later on to be Kumasawa because she mentions Mackerel, and that does it for me.
and to like, be fair, she does that.
And you can read a lot into it because, like, we don't know much about Kumasawa particularly, but we know that Virgilia, like, her relationship to Beatrice was like she was kind of a mentor, but she was also a servant kind of character. And that she was around in Kuadorian and stuff, and I was like, I think that's just supposed to be information about what Kumasawa has experienced and what she might know about. that's my take anyway.
I like it. It's good reading.
I completely agree with you because I've long been saying that the witch explanation gives us information about the human explanation. Yeah. I think that's a really good correlation. Off the back of that argument, I also want to argue that the furniture represents access to different weapons. Ooh. So the stakes represent whatever the like ice pick crossbow stake contraption is.
Yeah.
Which Ange in Extra World, like 1998 or whatever has, like, she's inherited that somehow and now has the stakes. The Chiestas represent the guns. Because it makes sense why killing somebody with a short sawn-off shotgun would produce the wounds that we see Natsui have. I don't know enough about gunshot wounds to, like, perfectly confirm that, but I feel
it sounds
like
about right, though, doesn't it?
They're close enough. And it makes sense why Kinzo summons them. It makes sense why Eva Beatrice is able to summon them once she gets into the house where the guns are. I'm wondering if there's, like, some form of sniper rifle as well as the sawn-off shotguns, based on the stuff that the Chiestas say.
Interesting. Yes. Interesting.
I don't think that's a bad line of logic, because you do know that the demons, the furniture, have to have some kind of vessel in order to be summoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes some form of sense.
No one's really talked about a vessel for any of the Chiestas, so.
Yes. Yeah. Is it possible that Genji...
Well, that's interesting, because I can think of another set of rabbits.
I was holding off on saying something about that.
The little...
What are we talking about?
The ceramic rabbits?
The what?
You're talking about the ceramic rabbits?
Let's cycle back to that.
Oh, the ceramic rabbits. Oh. Interesting.
I think that's a complete red mackerel from you right there. I'm not having any of that.
It's just interesting because one of the Chester sisters is dead.
And there were four
Rosa smashed one of the ceramic rivets.
And it comes up later, but there's a certain sound that rabbits make that Maria mentions. And I will point it out when we get there.
I wonder if it's like, me-hee-hee, or something, because that's one of
A little more innocuous, don't worry.
There was a moment later on where somebody starts complaining about a boing boing sound, and I was like, oh, Shannon's here. because I'd been like control tabbing through, so I hadn't heard the boing boing sound just yet, and I was like, oh, she's on her way.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna have to do rabbit research now.
I don't know how that makes sense that Kinzo and Eva Beatrice are able to summon the fucking Woodland Gang, though. Like, I can see all of these parallels, but it doesn't make any sense. The only way it makes sense is if the solution to Umineko is that Maria is the culprit, and I am completely unwilling to believe that.
Maybe all of the woodland animals were secretly guns. That's me.
Just a tiny pistol in this rabbit that Maria's taking to school.
Yes.
That's why she's not allowed to carry them around with her. Like, it can feel Gary at the least.
Can you imagine? She's like, hey, shopkeeper, will you play with my gun rabbits? And he's like, oh my god.
Yes, I will. I'm so sorry, child. Also, have all of these free eggs. Insane. God. I'm not ready to believe for even a modicum of a moment that the solution to Umineko is Maria is the one that's masterminding it. I think that's too cheap.
I'm willing to accept that for like one game board that she is being wielded and masterminded by other people to like help. But yeah. Or even do some murders, maybe, but like, yeah, I don't think she's behind it all.
I sure hope not.
Anyway, where were we?
So they get given the three options.
They get given this test, which is, among the three mentioned below, in order to gain two, sacrifice one. Your life... the life of the one you love, everyone else's lives. If you do not choose one, all of the above will be lost. So, in George's case, it's Shannon, and in Jessica's case, it's Cannon.
Yes.
Neither of them are particularly happy with this. Understandable.
And in the jail cell, the five servers are watching, and Vigilia's like, I'm gonna go get some tea. And she summons three goat servants to, like, watch them while they watch.
Yeah. I think the Chiesta's are, like, upset, and she's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because Kinzo asked them what they would answer out of the one, two, and three. And was like, yeah, tell me what the right answer is. And they all gave him answers, and he called them all filth and kicked them out. And he also, it's also very interesting because, like, he basically... He says he's had to take this test once. And I'm like, oh, of course he has. All of his family mysteriously died, leaving him the only one who could take the headship of the family. So I'm like, oh, he's done this as well. And he chose everyone else dying apart from him and the one he loves, who would probably be Beatrice. But I'm like, how was he put in this situation as well? Has this set of serial murders been happening on a semi-regular generational basis?
Well, I mean, to be fair, the rest of his family died in an earthquake. So, I don't think he was responsible for that.
He got thrust into, you know, leadership because of his six toes.
No.
He did that. He did that. I did have a moment where I was like, whoa. I did also try and consider what I would pick in this option. Then realizing that, like, the point of the test is not what you choose, but how you argue it. Like, it's some, like, I don't know, interview anyway. Question. I was like, okay, so actually what the premise of this is, how good are you at lying? Once again, how good are you at lying? And the answer is that both of them are like, without love I cannot bullshit or whatever, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so Jessica answers herself because she said that she would not be able to have, like, a happy life with Canon if she picked the other two options, because either Canon would be dead or he would not respect her for killing everyone. Yeah. And George is like, everyone, because I already came to this island willing to sacrifice everyone.
Yeah, he was like, I was ready to have my family as enemies because I thought they wouldn't approve of my marriage, and that's basically like murdering them all. And I was like,
I hate George.
Not really. And in that moment, I was like, this is so George, though, isn't it? Of course.
it's completely on brand for him.
Yeah.
Ronave is about to murder Jessica, and then Gap's like about to take George down to the dungeon, start killing people, and but then in a shock twist, they both start fighting back.
Yes.
Jessica whips out her brass knuckles, and George starts kicking.
Yeah. So
everybody
love that for them.
Everybody in these fights declares the move that they're gonna do before they do it, like they're fucking fighting game characters.
It's an anime fight! You have to do that! It's the rules!
It's so good! It's so good. George is like fighting like Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock, where he like gets beaten up for a little bit, and then he's like, I have learnt your moves now. Bamboozle, double tap, bypass, ninja, and I'm like,
see. I was so unhappy with this because this scene started with basically like Jessica being like, actually, no, you know what? No, I'm going to try and protect everyone. That's what I'm supposed to do. And starting like fucking wailing at Ronave with like brass knuckles. And I was like, yes. And then George starts the fight by running at Garth and she kicks the shit out of him. And there's just this, there's just this line where it's like, George was face down in a puddle. I was like, this is where George deserves to be. And then he starts doing competently. And I was like, boo, go back to losing. Stop it.
I've got some iconic quotes from the scene if we want them.
Mm-hmm.
George, as he gets beaten up, decides like he's gonna speak into the air as though Shannon can hear him, even though he has no way of believing that she's not, that she can. He says, quote, Shannon, you aren't furniture. Even if you are furniture, you're mine alone.
Bad.
When she hears that, she should run the fuck away.
That's grim. followed by also then George kicks Gap, and we get an animation where we see George's shoe, and it's like the only thing blocking Gap's vision was the bottom of George's shoe, and I'm like, not more foot content, come on. Come on.
He does all of this kicking. One thing that is really good about it, though, is that, like, he kind of... they try to really animate bits of it by just kind of, like, moving the sprite of him kicking quite quickly across the screen in some kind of, like, PowerPoint animation thing. It's so funny.
They're doing the best with what they've got, okay?
I love when it does this. George figures out that Gap's, like, amazing move is to, like, open up, like, these trapdoor holes, and he, like, does, like, the, like, ninja splits thing over the top of one, and it's written most beautifully as, but George rapidly opened his legs, straddling the hole, and I'm like,
I don't want to hear about George straddling any holes.
No!
I'm like Matt Lorre, I hear something that sounds a bit like sex, and sometimes I think it's funny, okay? Leave me in peace.
So then we have Gap's like losing some ground, so she summons the goats that Vigilia put in charge of the jail cell. Giving Cannon enough time to, like, break the bars with his purple laser sword.
Yeah, because it was established early on that basically Cannon and Shannon could have got out of those cells at any time, but they knew that basically they'd be instantly killed if they did. It's also established that they remember past game boards. Because they're talking about, like, oh, it'll be, like, just like last time. Like, we've never made it to the Golden Land. And I'm like, oh, I reckon Genji also is aware of, like, I reckon it's all of the furniture of Kinzo basically has remembered all of the stuff that's already happened. And I'm like, fingers crossed they get proper rebellious at some point and really fuck shit up for him. That would be great.
That would be good. That would be well good.
As they're running away, Vigilia, like, tries to, like, reinforce the prison, and the Chiesas start to shoot at them, but Shannon and Cannon block all the shots, and then do, like, an EMP on the Chiesas.
Fantasy EMP.
Yeah, and makes the pink Chiesas start going, ooh, Q, and they have to be rebooted.
Yeah, they basically have to go through IT support.
Which, it's important to note, Q is the sound that rabbits make.
Q is the sound that rabbits make, as Maria said earlier in this reading.
Is it?
Insane.
Yes. I did not pick up on that.
Okay. Neither did I until Kelsey pointed it out to me last night. So thank you, Kelsey.
That's so funny.
Sorry. Want to point out also as George is fighting Gap, he shows, quote, the expression he only showed for enemies who made him get serious.
How many times has this happened, George?
See me go sicko mode. I've got my beast form on. And I'm like, yeah, all right.
George goes sicko mode on Reddit quite a lot, I imagine.
Yeah. Oh my god.
He absolutely defeats Gap in the marketplace of ideas and then is unable to follow it up physically.
Oh, I also love the fact that Vigilia, once she finds out that her goats have gone, she bites her own tongue because she's just there going gap, 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 gap. Like in anger.
Vigilia's so good. So she sends all these goats after them. But like the issue is they all like keep competing to get there,
they're
and they're like walking away from each other.
They're too stupid and they're really jacked. So they can't get through the door because they're all trying to get through at once. And in this moment, the goats became some of the best characters in the game.
Me on a night out with the lads.
Like, yeah, Vigilia's just there, like, face-palming as they all get stuck in the door.
I had to skip a workout to, like, finish doing this reading, and I really felt it in my core when I was reading this. I was like, damn, I could be goat mode right now, but I'm sat reading visual novel Lumen Echo.
That was the one workout that would have turned you goat mode.
Vigilia catches up with the escaping group and like turns off the magic basically so Shannon and Cannon can't use it.
Yeah.
But then Krause is like, I will fight the goat in perhaps one of the greatest scenes in the visual novel.
And by that I mean it's terrible.
I am screaming and clapping, by the way, because they are running through underground passages.
Yes.
Yes. I'm just like absolutely just like pointing at my screen yelling because I'm like, I said that.
In capital letters, I've got Rowan Tunnel Theory confirmed.
Absolutely living. It also makes sense why Gap is like adding people into the tunnels with her like trapdoor magic. I was just like, yeah, tunnels. Mm-hmm. And then we get some numbies.
Oh,
then numbies. We get sicko numbie mode.
So, by like trash talking and like through the power of anime cliches, Goku-kun keeps popping loser flags.
What this looks like is basically like Vigil is just there being like, so you have no chance of winning, and then the game goes bing bong and the number in the top right goes up. And she's there like, she's just like, what the fuck is that?
This has the same energy as like in an anime when you start getting someone's tragic backstory and you're like, oh, that they're gonna die. That's what's happening this episode, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get Goat's the like, literal...
he's about to retire and he's gonna see his little goat sister and he has a childhood friend he's gonna marry. And all the loser flags end up like empowering Krause to be able to reach a high enough power level to defeat Goku.
Yeah, so he starts off as a power... They were like... So, like, I think the first loser flag they get is Vigilia's like, you're not going to win this because Krause has a power level of 6 and this goat has 1,000. So there. And then they end up with a multiplier from the loser flags of, like, 20. Yeah. And then they add a load of multipliers from other ridiculous stuff as well.
So good.
In short, Krause's maximum power level of 6 times 8 would be 48 at the most. He might or may not be able to win if he repeated that lucky shot a full 20 times. On top of that, there was an amplification of times 20 equal the number of loser flags, making for times 160. At a glance, that was an incredible amplification, but even so, Krause's power level was 6. Even multiplied by 160, it only made for a power of 960, just barely below the goat's 1,000. I'm like, shut up. Shut the fuck up.
So, Krause, like, knocks the goat on top of Vigilia, and they sort of run past her. And
Nancho's like, sorry, goat-san, on the way out. Like,
I love it when my faves interact.
Nancho ex goat-san.
So, then we cut to the conclusion of the, Jessica and George's fight. Where, like, they're both going in for their finishing blow, but then Gap pulls a little bit of hole magic, and,
You cannot say the word hole magic!
I can say the word hole magic!
No!
Goes into... Jessica's, like, punches George while he's, like, kicking her, and, they both kill each other.
Yeah!
And then...
Womp.
Gap's like, haha, this was exactly as planned! Which is a very Beatrice thing to say. Ronovan, like, meanwhile, seems a bit kind of sad about, like, the fact that... Because he was trying to persuade Jessica not to do her final punch. Because he was like, it's not going to end well for you. And it didn't.
Yeah, he was having a good... He was having a good time. I remain, like, Ronovan stan. I think he genuinely was likes Jessica and didn't want this to happen.
Mm.
Bless
him. He's just being a bro.
So through all of this, the assorted gang managed to escape, and Kyrie...
Well, we have a phone call to do first.
Oh, yes.
Jessica is brought back to life for about 3 minutes so that she can phone call Baffler.
Yeah, Ronovae's like, I respected you too much. I'm going to let you have one final phone call. Yeah.
So she has a phone call where she talks about everything that's happened. She says George also instantly died. Don't fuck up your test, Baffler. She's like, I'm already dead. And then she's like, yep, about to die. Bye, Baffler.
And yeah, she's basically just like, we're not facing a human. It's supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the gang emerge from a well, which apparently leads to Cuadorian.
Yeah, although we have confirmation that there are multiple passages, not only because the goat and Vigilia went through a shortcut to get in front of the others for that battle, but also because Namjo's like, oh, I've never had to climb up a well before. We usually used stairs. So I think, like, there are multiple passageways and various ways this place can go. So I'm like, oh, the web of tunnels, it's happening.
Yeah, this information is extremely useful for, like, deciding murders if you know that there is miscellaneous passages throughout the island.
Yeah, one of which that definitely goes from the mansion to a well in the garden, or Cuadorian, or, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Cannon's about to leave, but then gets shot by a Chiesta. Mm-hmm.
They finally rebooted.
And falls back into the well. And then Shannon's killed, and everyone's running back to the mansion. Nando's killed. They get to the mansion. Kraus is killed. And then Kyria goes into, like, a guest room, locks herself in, and makes a phone call to Baffler.
Yeah.
And kind of describes everything that she's seen.
I was having a fucking moment with this one, because Kyrie says to Battler on the phone, so I want you alone to believe, to understand, to accept the existence of what we couldn't accept. If you do that for me, our deaths won't be wasted. It'll also have been worth it for me to make this phone call. Ah. And I'm like, Beatrice, you promised not to do this to Battler anymore. You promised not to, like, emotionally manipulate him into agreeing to the existence of witches, and you've just, like, gone and taken Kyrie and made her be like, I'm your only surviving family member, I'm your mum now, I love you, I'm really proud of you, can you do this one thing for me and believe in witches?
And it doesn't even track, like, how on earth would Battler believing in witches mean their deaths weren't wasted? Like, it doesn't, like, they're still dead. He still doesn't know exactly how they died. Like, it's like, this information does not help him. So yeah, no. I'm like, if there was a phone call there in the human explanation, I'm guessing that wasn't what it was about.
No, I do think that a couple of times during this episode, Kyrie...
This phone call definitely happened.
Cool.
Ooh. 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 I think a couple of times during this episode, Kyrie, like, makes arguments by being like, it's worthless for us to get hung up on this detail when talking about witches, where she's like... like, with the umbrella, she's like, actually, it doesn't matter who gave Maria the umbrella. The important thing is to prove or disprove the existence of witches, and this is how we're going to do it this other way. And I'm like, okay. Or prove or disprove that Kinzo's alive, and this is how we're going to do it. And I was like, okay, this makes some sense. Like, what she's arguing here could tie into that. But I think the way she's saying it is just, like, completely not Kyrie.
I think it makes more sense because the Chiestas are currently trying to get into the room where she is. I think it makes sense that if she was gonna, she calls Battler because she knows she's about to die, so she's saying goodbye, and she's probably also telling him any information that he needs to know about who the killer is.
Yeah.
But obviously in the witch explanation, that's the witches, but I mean, in the human one, it's probably... She's probably telling him what happened so that he can be prepared for...
The phone call is the same in both the human and the witch explanation.
Ooh.
Oh. Well, I don't like that.
Shut that one down real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Courtney not starving us of red truth.
No.
No, I can't give you that one.
You're so kind to us. That's awful.
That's ridiculous.
I have some thoughts about, like, this being a really elaborate ploy here. There is a small piece in the back of my mind that does not believe that Kinzo is alive. Mm. There is part of me that still is like, that theory hasn't been disproved. Nobody's alive who's alive currently has seen Kinzo.
There hasn't been any the status on Goda and Kumasara is, but
there hasn't been any red truth to dispute it.
No.
Do you think you could provide us with a red truth here, Courtney, that the definition of human that Kyrie is using is the same definition of human as we're using? Where it's not like, oh my god, they're a monster. It's they're supernatural. Is that what Kyrie is? Is Kyrie definitely saying, I believe this to be supernatural? Or is she just being like, it's a monster?
Supernatural.
Okay, that's very helpful. I can now go and theorycraft.
I don't want to have to come up with theories for how on earth people simulated the goat men and Chiesta bullets and all of that. I just don't want to.
Some of the
I'm gonna go look at exactly what we get from that phone conversation though and see like how vague it is.
I think it is pretty vague.
Because that's the thing, even if Kyrie thinks that what's happened is supernatural, it doesn't mean that things went down exactly how we saw them. It's still a difficult one.
I'm full any scene involving a witch or furniture is not real, pilled.
Can be completely rewritten, or at least partially rewritten.
After this phone call, Kyrie is killed, that is the end of our reading.
Yeah, so essentially, like, the 4th through 8th Twilights are Canon, Shannon, Nanjo, Kraus, Kyrie, but they happen so quickly, and like in the bit we've read anyway, they don't get confirmed as dead. We don't get to see their bodies. We don't, you know, any of that. Mm. They're also described mostly as shot in the head, and there are no stakes described either. So it'll be interesting to see if those come up at any point.
Yeah, because we've got so very little like Beatrice content here, it's really hard to like form arguments, because as was her intention, we don't have a lot to argue against, because we don't have a lot of red truth to like help confine us.
We're gonna get a lot of that right at the very end.
Battler, Peace Battler hasn't had a chance to see anything himself.
No, he's just been told about everything.
Yeah,
Peace Battler hasn't done anything, actually. Yeah,
he hasn't even been able to confirm who is and isn't dead.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the rest of this episode will be Peace Battler wandering around the crime scenes looking at what has occurred, like what the crime scenes are, and Battler and Beatrice like duking it out in the meta world with Red Truth.
I think there certainly will be at least some of the duking out with Red Truth, whether or not Peace Battler is involved, I'm not sure. But, like, I did think it was interesting, for example, like, so the two who are close by the epitaph in these two are George and Jessica, who aren't, like, close to each other, but they both have significant others, which I thought was cool. And they're killed in very different ways. Like George has his, you know, gets punched to death, but then puts his body back together, and so it looks like he's sleeping, and then just stabs him in the head with a stiletto. So he's got one stab through into the head, which is an interesting one. But then Jessica like basically has her head caved in and loads of shrapnel basically thrown out her body, and I'm trying to work out did George get staked and Jessica got shot with a shotgun? Like, how would they actually end up dying here?
God, I wish someone would examine the crime scene.
Yeah, I would love to have a look at the bodies. That would be good.
Does our special guest have anything to add?
I think y'all have covered pretty much everything. Well, okay. There is one thing that I thought was interesting during the anime fight scene. Ooh. So, Jessica and George both use power-ups that are kind of based on their significant others. So, George's fighting style is very defensive, which is very reminiscent of Shannon's whole barrier thing, Whereas Canon's whole thing is like swords, which would parallel Jessica, you know, being on the offensive all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's about the only other observation that I had.
That's cute.
They basically get love power-ups. And I was like, when it happened to Jessica, I was like, aw. And when it happened to George, I was like, ugh.
They're basically using them as, like, their Digimon power-ups. It's fine.
Yeah.
They're bio-merging.
Mansion.
I had to work it in.
I love that. So on brand. Right, well, Eddie, is that everyone's final thoughts on this reading?
Yeah, I think any synthesis is probably going to happen a little bit later on.
I have so much to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot to think
you
about.
You really do.
My brain is going, rabbits, magic, murder weapon.
Like, this far in the reading, you have a lot to work with, but nothing you can do anything concrete with because you don't have any barriers to work within.
Yeah.
Geez.
At this point, you could literally go, Amicia struck Rock and Jima and killed everyone except Bathwa.
No one can tell you you're wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, and I guess Maria.
That's fair.
Maria. So, for our next reading, we will be reading the rest of chapter 4, including the tea parties. So, rest of episode 4. So, if you're reading along with us, that's where we're going.
Yeah, so that's going to be long then.
Not actually, I don't think it's too bad, but the tea party is quite long, so.
Courtney said to me that episode 16 is chapter 16 is the longest chapter in the entirety of Umenako, and that makes me really happy because that means like
it was really long.
It was long. That's a nice watermark.
It got me, I got to like, it was like 10 at night and I was like, oh, I've only got one chapter left until we finish the reading. I'll just continue. And then it got to like midnight and I was like, how is it still going?
Beautiful.
Iconic. So follow us on Twitter at Hidden Tea Party. Our socials can be found in the description, as well as our special guest, Kelsey's social, which is at StarCross, but with like a C with an X instead of a C. Yes.
Yeah, or StarCross, yeah, with an X. The only thing I'm going to plug is play Digimon Survive. If anyone tells you that it's a bad game, they're wrong. It's a good visual novel.
I know nothing of this. I stand you in your Bulbos.
It is less upsetting of a visual novel than Umineko. Probably.
Ooh.
You've people got me die, though. It's fine.
If you die in Digimon, you die in real life.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Is Digimon shorter?
Yeah. Well, Okay. If you want the part, it's definitely shorter than both parts of Umineko together. I'll give you that.
Sick.
So still, love to see it. Still a I'll good put several it novels back to back. Then.
Yes.
Right. On that note, then. Thank you and good night.
Bye.